today?
I'm pretty good.
That's going to be the start of every episode now. Pretty good.
Yeah. I'm pretty good. Got a bit of a tummy ache as per usual. But
oh, no.
I'm well. I don't know. My stomach has its days.
Oh, trust me, so does mine.
Always growling.
I've been there. And I've been there at the most important events of my life.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So as a lot of our listeners will know, we come from a Greek background. So there's a few traditions that come with getting married.
Oh, yeah.
Like one is called the grevati. And what you do is you make the bridesmaids will make the marital bed.
Oh, yeah. It's the whole thing. And you throw money on the bed. Yeah. Money on the bed. Yeah. It's a very fun thing. I feel like at my friend's one, she got like a solid $4,000 from that bed.
Yeah, you do. You get a bit of money. And then you throw like sugar almonds and
babies.
Babies and... And
the some people's imagine babies getting flung.
Did you bring the babies?
Yeah.
No. So, and typically, like the first baby that gets thrown on the bed is what you'll have first as a child. But it didn't come true in my case.
Yeah, I don't think it came true in my friend's case either.
No. Like my niece got thrown onto the bed, but I had the boy.
Because when you think about it, what is the chances of like what happens if there's no other baby in that's
there's
not,
no baby? Yeah, exactly. You have to go hire a baby.
Yeah. Yeah, like what happens if you're the first person in your family to have a child, like, or to get married? Like, what?
I don't know.
Just like a grown-up 15-year-old is like, yeah.
Just the youngest. Yeah. Like, imagine if it was just my younger brother who was 18, we had to throw him on the bed. You know,
it would have been more true.
You're right. In this case. Anyway, so I am the host of this party, and my mother-in-law made the most wonderful cheese board. Oh, my goodness. I spent half the night at that cheese board. But then,
cheese board.
Catastrophe struck.
Toilet time.
I had the runs. I had the runs that it made me run to the toilet, if you know what I'm saying.
Oh.
At my cravati.
Wait. The ensuite toilet?
The ensuite toilet.
Of the bedroom that we're making the bed of.
Yeah.
I was there at this event. How the hell did you kind of were? I just assumed you were busy, like, and you weren't really with us.
I was too busy shitting myself.
Yeah.
And the funny thing was, we had just moved into our house at the time.
Yeah.
And we had done renovations, but we hadn't put up bedroom doors yet. Oh. So I had to go to the toilet with the door open.
Oh, no.
At my cravati, that had like 60 people. So I had to get my older brother to like stand at the front door,
like stand guard,
so I could shit myself,
yeah,
and let no door to block the smell from wafting. I didn't have any con. so it was probably the most embarrassing thing ever.
Well, I was a guest and I did not notice at all. I just assumed you were busy with like other people and. Nope. But that makes sense.
No, nope. Hopefully everyone else thought the same thing except for my older brother who knew I was like...
I kind of love that like thing with you can look in the eyes of like a brother and be like, I need you to just stand guard while I have diarrhea.
Well, the thing is, right, is that it kind of runs in my family to get the runs easily.
Yeah.
But the thing is, it's so random that we can't point to something and say that we have an intolerance to that thing, because I'll have that one day and be fine, and I'll have it the next day and I won't be, and I'll have it the next week and I'll be fine again. Like, it's really odd, right?
Yeah.
And we all are like that.
So interesting.
Yeah,
we're all like that. I'm a bit funky like that too. Like, I assume I'm lactose intolerant because I cop it with certain types of lactose. Like, certain cheeses will do it to me, but certain cheeses will not.
Yeah, it's really odd, right?
But I've heard that there's different types of like you can, maybe. There's different types that you can have an intolerance to.
Right. Well, there
so
you
maybe
go.
Something like
maybe
that.
Maybe I have an intolerance to something.
Let's
but
go
I
do
don't...
an intolerance test and we can like record it and make it a whole thing.
Yeah.
Come with us to find out if we're lactose.
What gives us the runs?
Yes.
Which specific items? Anyway, so I kind of just had to look at my brother.
Yeah.
And he knew.
He just knew. You're like,
he knew what was about to happen. I was like, Jono, like, help me. Like, I need to go to the toilet and I've got no doors. And he's like, don't worry about it.
I've got
just
this.
Just go. I've got this. I'll stand guard.
Oh, I can imagine him being such a good bodyguard. Like,
he is.
Yeah.
Because he kind of looks like one.
Yeah.
He's, like, tall and really solid. So he's like, meep. Not tall. He's actually short.
I was just about to say, like, where'd you say tall
he
from?
He seems tall because he's so solid.
Right? No. He's the only cousin that makes me feel like he is related to me because he is also short. Like, you know what I mean? All the rest of my cousins are giants.
Sorry, Jono.
Yes. On the topic of, like, hosting parties.
Ah, yeah.
How shit is that? I just want to say, like, it's something that you look forward to and you're like, oh my God, I can't wait to have this event. Like, it's going to be so exciting. And then you're like, all the planning before the actual planning is so exciting and the imagination of it. And then when you start planning the event, you're like, oh shit, this is costing a lot of money. Or like, oh shit, like, I have to sort out so many things before, like, this actual thing happens. Mm. And then when you're there trying to enjoy the day, you're just spending the whole time going up to people and saying, hey, how are ya? Okay. Yeah. And then to the next person, hey, how are ya?
It's the worst.
You never get to, like, just sit and have, like, a proper conversation with someone. And then when you do, you're so conscious of, like, the time you're spending with that one group that you're like, oh, I should probably go speak to another group. I should
probably see if someone needs a coffee or something.
Yeah, or, like,
No. I know exactly what you mean. And I have had my fair share of parties, Elle.
Mm-hmm.
Not only have I hosted my own crap and my husband's shit and my son's stuff, but I've hosted other people's crap.
Oh, yeah.
I am not a host person. Mm. I feel like when it comes to hosting, I am good at it. Mm. I very easily am able to make sure everyone has what they need, so all the food is ready and the place looks good and blah, blah, blah. But I don't enjoy it. Mm. I freaking hate it.
See, you do host well. I don't think you ever look like you're under stress or anything. Like, even at your wedding, it was like your day.
Oh, man.
And you were so easy breezy, cover girl. Like, it was so good.
Easy breezy. Oh, my God. The morning of my wedding was absolute bliss. Usually, mornings of weddings are freaking, like, blizzards.
Intense, yeah. No, it was very chill.
It was a super chilled morning. We put on Sex and the City movie.
I know. I watched it for the first time that day. Yeah? I was crying after I got my makeup done. And I was like, oh, this is so wonderful.
And all of my family came. Like, literally a million little tiny Greeks rocked up.
Mm.
And that's it. It was just really calm. Then I went to the church. Then I got married.
It was beautiful. Then we
had the reception. And I didn't do the whole go to every table and say hello.
I don't think it's necessary. Like, I feel like everyone knows that you're there. Like, it's nice to do, I suppose, but I feel like I'd forget to do it.
Yeah.
Like, I just want to be enjoying the time.
Yeah, I more just danced. And if someone wanted to say hello and congratulations, they can come up to me.
Yeah. I think it's fair. Yeah. I think that's one thing as well. Like, you do have that, like, nice, calm approach when you're the host of something. Mm. Where when I'm hosting something, every time I do say hi to someone, they're like, are you okay? You look stressed. You look stressed. I swear to God.
Hello!
I was, like, 4 years old and people are like, you look stressed. And I'm like, why do I look stressed all the time? Is it just my face? Like, but literally, I obviously, even when I'm not feeling as stressed as I usually am, which is still probably, like, a 6 out of 10, like, I'm constantly told I look stressed and that, like I can tell I'm doing a poor job. Like, do you know what I mean?
No, you do great jobs. Not that I've been anywhere where you've hosted.
Yes. You came to my 21st. I showed people my cake. Yeah. And then I was like, okay.
All right, bye. Like, this is my cake. And move along now. Yeah. Move along.
I was so awkward. I was like, hi, this is my cake. And then
bye now.
Yeah, because I was like, oh my God, there's so many people. I don't know how to, like, interact. Yeah. And then when I finally spent time with one person, I literally spent time with one person for ages.
Yeah.
To the point where I forgot to spend time with everyone else. And people were walking up to me being like, hello. Goodbye. And I was like, shit, I didn't say hello to anyone else. Although, I must say, now I've never had a birthday where I've been on my ADHD medication before, so I'm curious to see if it'll be different this time.
You might find it easy to ask people how they're going.
I think so, because really small talk does not... I'm not a small talk kind of gal. I really struggle at small
talk. You're like existential crisis conversation kind of person.
Yes, I really am.
Hi, what was your nightmare about last night?
Literally, and then they'll say something and I'll interrupt them halfway through and be like, mine was this.
Shall we move on to formalities?
Yes, please.
Alrighty then. Okay, Elle, I think it's getting to a point where if I start to mention anything about a toilet, you need to stop me.
Mm-hmm. I do.
Yeah. I don't know why I keep talking about a toilet or toilet behavior.
Toilet behavior humor. I feel like the last couple of episodes I cannot stop talking about the toilet. Yeah.
It's actually become a problem.
I think maybe, like, because you're toilet training at the moment. Is your reckon that's why?
You know what? Maybe.
Yeah. It's in your mind.
It's in my mind.
Hmm. Apologies to anyone else that listens and is like, why are these girls constantly talking about toilet humor? It's not even funny.
Man, fart jokes are the freaking best. I don't care what anyone says.
Yeah, they are funny. I always like them too.
What we like to do on the podcast is to tell you what was number one in music history this week. And when I say this week, I mean the week that the episode comes out. In 1976, Silly Love Songs by Wings was number one.
Ooh.
Mm-hmm.
Silly Love Songs.
So easy to not know the words.
No. You know what I love? That he's just like basically saying like the world is sick of silly love songs, but what's wrong with that? I'd like to know because I'm going to sing them again.
Yeah, that's pretty much right.
Yeah,
that's
I love
pretty
it.
Much right. This song was number one. Obviously, as we know, for 5 weeks. Oof. Not too bad, not too bad. Not the best, not the worst that I've seen. Well, you know what the funny thing is? I read this on Song Facts, but I have never seen John say anything like this before. But apparently, Paul wrote this in response to the Beatles' breakup.
Yeah.
Because apparently, John Lennon made a comment. Paul wrote all the silly love songs of the group. Like, that's the only thing he wrote.
Oh, but they're the best parts. Those are the ones I like.
Yes.
I love the silly love songs.
Yes.
Well, they're literally my favorite part.
John's got a problem with them, apparently.
That's bizarre. Like,
I don't know how true that is.
Yeah, though. I wouldn't be sure how true that is. But to be honest, I actually love them. And you know what? I've had this... This is going to sound so weird, but I've had this vendetta against the word silly my whole life. I don't know why. Every time someone
so
said it, it gives me the same feeling as like, what is moist? I get the same feeling.
Moist.
Silly, it bothers me.
Right.
But this song is the, once I started listening to this song a couple of years ago, it's the only time I will say that word and feel like calm because I really enjoyed the song.
So what if Paul McCartney made a song that was about moist love songs?
No, I still don't like the moist.
So you'd moist be okay with it?
Nah. More silly love songs, it just works a little bit better. I don't know.
Obviously, it works a lot better.
Yeah, moist is like, no one likes that word. I don't even like saying it right now.
It doesn't bother me.
Nah.
It doesn't bother me, moist. I don't think there's many words that actually bother me.
That one does.
Moist doesn't.
Mm.
You know what bothers me? The what? See you next Tuesday word.
It doesn't bother me too much. I actually like throwing it around.
No, I don't. I it feels unnatural to me to say.
Same here if I'm just speaking normally, but if I'm angry, I'm like, that person is up.
Like, oh, no, I can't. I never
sometimes
go,
it just flies out lately.
I never go to that word.
I
it's
never
only
used
in
to.
The most dire situation where I'll be like, yeah, she's a...
Yeah.
You know?
I feel like that word's been coming out of me a lot more lately. And not even directed at people. I just keep saying it, but I don't know why.
You bloody Aussie.
Yeah, oi, oi, oi. Like, but I, yeah, I don't know. Back to the Paul McCartney thing, though. This music video, I made this discovery a few years ago where there's a certain part of it where I look kind of like Paul McCartney as he's getting onto like a little airplane. And he like turns his head with his mullet.
It's the look that he has on his face.
Yeah, it's the face he's making and the exact angle of his face. And I remember one time I was watching it on like the TV on Foxtel and I was talking to mum and I paused the TV as I went to talk to her. And then when I looked back at the TV, I was like, ooh, like, why am I there? And then mum's like, that does look like you. And I was like, what? So I'm going to take it as a compliment, even though it is not a flattering part of me to look like. I'm going to take it as a compliment because who wouldn't want to look like a Beatle?
Me.
I like the Beatles. I would like to look like them.
Nah, I'm good.
Even Ringo, I'd like to look like all of them in some weird way.
In 2000, Be With You by Enrique Iglesias was number one.
Can I tell you, Enrique was like my love.
Really?
As a child. Love. Still even now, I have a very big soft spot for Enrique and his music. And when I'm sad, that is my go-to music.
Wow, 100%. I did not know that.
Yeah, ever since I was a kid as well, like I'd always put on my Enrique CD and I would just like full cry to every single song or like full scream. It's just such a nice thing to like get out.
Right.
Like Escape, Hero, all of them. Right. Be With You, Balamos, all of them.
Right.
So good. I feel like, and sometimes I'd even listen to the Spanish version once and I felt like I could say them and obviously I cannot.
Yes.
But it feels like I know the words from within, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah. I don't know, something about Enrique really, don't turn off the lights. And when I went to his concert, I was so, you don't understand, I was so, so happy.
Did he make love with the crowd?
He really did. He kissed this woman in the crowd.
Oh!
And she was like right below like there and I was so jealous. I was 16, but I've
always wanted to be that person.
I know.
That gets kissed. It's like when Elvis used to go and kiss the women in the audience. Oh. I wanted to be one of those women that got kissed.
Same, my friend. Same, same. I want to dance in the dark with Bruce Springsteen and his concert so bad. It is literally the only wish I have. It is the only wish.
You know what, El? It will happen for you. I feel like
it will, and it should have already, but it will happen this time. Next time I go to his concert, it will happen.
Yeah.
But back on Be With You.
Mm-hmm.
So this was his second number one after Balamos to get released. Uh-huh. Before that, he was quite big in, like, the Latin community, but these two songs kind of really helped him merge into, like, the more, like, English, like, category of music. Uh-huh. So he started, he had, it, like, led to his, like, album that had a lot more, like, songs that were sung in English.
Yeah.
The song actually got nominated for a Grammy for the Best Dance Music Award.
Okay.
He didn't win, but who did win was Baha Men Who Let the Dogs Out, which I found very, very interesting because I love that song. And I feel like they're very different, but I kind of see how, like, Who Let the Dogs Out was more of a dance song at the time.
Funny? I heard that song today.
Really? What, on the radio?
No, on my phone somehow.
Oh, what? It just randomly popped up?
Like, it must have come up on it, like, as you're scrolling through, like videos? Instagram or something.
Yeah.
It came up today. I heard it.
I love that song. It makes me think of Rugrats every time because
Yes,
the end of the VHS I used to have had, like...
Yeah.
So good, man.
In 2014, Fancy by Iggy Azalea featuring Charlie XCX was number one.
Nice. That song was massive back then.
Freaking wildly massive.
Yeah, it was everywhere. And I remember learning that Iggy Azalea was from Australia originally. Oh, and I was like, whoa. Like, because you, like, although they are Australian artists, like, they are never, like, so big in, like, all over.
Everywhere.
All yeah, over everywhere. It's so sick. And that was the cool music video with, like, the Clueless kind of vibe.
Yes. And they actually shot some of the music video at the where they shot Clueless.
What?
Yeah.
That is so cool.
I know. That's what's so awesome about it. But I get what you mean where it was so shocking to find out she was Australian because her natural talking voice sounds nothing like her, like, rapping voice.
Oh, yeah. Very true, actually. Good point.
Sounds nothing like it. Like, she's very, like, yeah. Not like that at all. But yeah. You know what I mean? She's not, like, Aussie.
Yeah.
Like, she doesn't sound Aussie anyway.
I reckon. I get what you're saying. I feel like for a lot of Australian singers, I've noticed that they put on an American accent just because it sounds more...
It does sound better.
It does. I think even for us on the podcast, like, sometimes I'm like, should we just talk in an American accent? Because I prefer the way it sounds.
Yeah, like, I would too.
Yeah, I just feel like... I think, like, entertainment, you're so used to an American accent that, like, anything other than that just sounds off, like, slightly off.
No, I get ya. Unless you're watching something specifically British.
Yes.
Which is agreed. A whole different ballgame. Because the humor's different.
Yeah.
All that is different. It just suits that. Whereas Aussie programming, I don't know, sometimes I feel like it just doesn't work.
Yeah. But I guess at the same time, it just feels like... just too normal. Like, yeah, it doesn't feel like acting or doesn't feel like entertainment because you're like, oh, that's just how I talk to my friend.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, it's really odd.
Yeah, it's weird.
It's really odd. What is cool about this song is that while this was number one,
mm-hmm.
Iggy Azalea also did a song called Problem with Ariana Grande.
Oh, yes. I got one less problem without you.
Yes, and this song was at number two while Fancy was at number one.
Yes, I actually do remember this.
Yes. Iggy Azalea, the Australian... became the first act since the Beatles to occupy the first two spots.
Oh, really?
Of the Hot 100.
You wouldn't think that. You'd think between that period of time there'd be more people that have done that.
One and two.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
That's really cool.
I know. Good on it.
What an achievement. That'd be really cool.
It's freaking insane.
Damn. That's so exciting. That's wild to me that, like, no one else in between that has had, like, two back-to-back, like...
No.
Just there.
No. They might have had, like, back-to-back number ones.
Yeah.
But not, like, how Usher was, like, how Burn overtook, you know,
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But it was, But it was never, like, Yeah was one, Burn was two. It was, like, it just kind of overtook it. And then Yeah just dropped down.
Yeah, it drops a few because it, depending on release dates, I assume, and stuff like that. That is cool.
Yeah.
Nice. Good on you, Iggy.
Go, Iggy. Represent Aussie. It's time to talk about celebrity birthdays, Elle.
Mm-hmm.
So what we like to do is we like to tell you a random birthday and tell you which musician shares their birthday. And then you tell us if you share that birthday.
Mm-hmm.
Woohoo! If you were born on the 7th of November,
mm-hmm.
I feel like we've had a lot of November birthdays lately.
I feel like it too. Mm.
You would share a birthday with David Guetta.
Ooh!
Yeah, he's 55 years old.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. Man, I feel like that man, he is really timeless in terms of his music. You can always listen to it even if it's years after.
Yeah, yeah, I agree.
But also every, no, it doesn't matter what like year it is, he still finds a way to understand the music culture of that time and make his way through it.
I most definitely agree. All right, we're going to take a quick break, but before we do, we must ask you a few things. If you could please follow us on whatever you use to listen to podcasts.
Yeah.
Or even social media. That'd be great too.
Yeah, and please tell a friend about us.
Oh, we would appreciate that. Up the wazoo.
Yeah, or your mum and your dad, you know.
Your mum. Whoever you're in cahoots with.
Yes, exactly, and who you think would like us.
Yeah.
And yeah, if you like what you're listening to, don't forget to rate us a 5 out of 5.
Yes, 5 out of 5.
On whatever platform you're using, ratings really help us out.
Yes, they really do, guys. They really do. No doubt. No doubt about that. Now, we'll be right back.
So we're back, guys, and today we thought we'd do something a little bit different, something a bit fun. Something that we like to do in our spare time, or at least I do, is
I definitely do.
Yeah, I listen to music on YouTube, like, because I still am deep down a 16-year-old in the 2010s. I know,
that was the best way to find music.
Yeah, and I just look at what suggestions there are and, like, what other things are, and even songs I already love, I like reading through the comments as I'm listening and watching the music video.
Yeah.
And sometimes the comments, they just either comment about something that you agree with, or they just say something that's really inspirational and sweet, or sometimes they just say something that you disagree with. But a lot of the times it's people actually sharing their, like, their story and their connection to that song, the same way that we sort of talk about songs and what they mean to us and the way we ask our guests what songs mean to them.
Yeah.
If you look through the comment section of YouTube, you really get to see why someone feels so touched and connected to a song and why certain songs are so, so important to society and how most much they've impacted
how
the world.
How much they can comfort people in times of need, especially.
Yeah,
which
exactly.
is what I love. You know, a lot of the times you'll read something like, oh, this was my parents' favorite song and I played it at their funeral. Or
I also like that when it's a song I don't necessarily love so much, like I haven't truly listened to it properly and I'm finding it for the first time. And then when I'm scrolling through the comments, I notice someone's given me like their interpretation of the song in the comments. And then you suddenly listen to the song and view the song in such a different way based on that comment. And you're like, wow, I see why you love this song. Yeah. And I understand now why I can love it too.
Most definitely. I love that.
Yeah.
I love it when someone can open my eyes on certain things.
Same.
Like music, like movies, like anything.
Oh, 100%.
If you often tell me the reason why you love something so much, I'll start loving it too.
Yeah. And guys, like when we do this, we don't know how this episode is going to go, like how it's going to be. We're just thinking, we'll read out some comments, see where it goes.
We just kind of picked a few songs that we wanted to try and we're just going to go through the comments live.
Yeah, we're just trying something different. And if you like what we end up doing, let us know and then we can keep this as like a series or something. But for now, we're just wanting to try something new.
Yeah.
Fix it up, change it up.
Yeah, change it up. Yeah. Try something new. Get a bit saucy with it.
Get saucy.
Get saucy.
So, you want to hit me?
All right. So, the first song that okay, this is going to be a tough one.
Yeah?
This one's going to be a tough one. The song that I am going to go with first is Tears in Heaven by Eric Clapton. Now, if you don't know the backstory to this song, you better buckle in.
Mm.
Okay. So, Eric Clapton's son passed away at around 3 years old because he actually fell out of a building. Like, not a building. He fell out of the apartment window. Incredibly tragic, tragic stuff here. And the quick read that I did through the comments, they're all very sad.
I can imagine, yeah.
So buckle in. I hope everyone's ready.
Hey, trigger warnings.
Trigger warnings. So this first comment I'm going to read out is, I'm sitting with my 29-year-old daughter today in hospice. She has very little time left. We played this song at my mother's service in 2001 when she passed away from cancer. My little girl had a special bond with my mother, so they will be back together soon.
Isn't it sad, like, how, like, a song, like, in that moment before that, like, I wonder if she knew that that was something she was going to have to play again for another person that's so close to her in her life. It's so hard. I can't ever picture being in that position at all.
I know, losing your child. I think that I feel like losing a child is just probably the worst thing to ever happen to a person, no matter the age. Because, I don't know, something about the fact that you created that person is yours. Like, like, from a mother's point of view, you literally grew them in you. I feel like that would be just the hardest thing in the world. And she's that person, I don't know if it's a he or a she, they're sitting at this hospice with their 29-year-old daughter, just knowing that you've got so much of your life left and your child's not going to be there.
Exactly. Or like knowing that they had so much of their life left that they could have fulfilled as well.
I know.
I feel like that's the thing sometimes when it's someone's child, whether they're really young or even like still an adult, but they're their child, it's like you would think to yourself like, well, I know even if it's not your child, like you look at them and you're like, it's such an innocent creature, like an innocent person. Like why they probably don't, especially when it's an actual child, like they don't know what's going on really. And like, it would be so fucking scary for them if it was something that was gradually happening like that.
Yeah.
And I feel like it's just, sometimes it's hard to like look at life and think that it's fair when shit like that happens.
It's not fucking fair.
Yeah.
I can tell you that, especially when stuff like this happens to kids, it's fucking very unfair. So the next comment I wanted to read was, this song has kept me from suicide so many times. When I get to the point I'm losing it and sitting alone in the dark with my thoughts and with my gun, I have to listen to this and look at pictures of my daughter. Your song has saved my life so many times, Mr. Clapton. Thank you. And even though my daughter doesn't know my mental state of being, I'm sure she would appreciate this song as I do because it saved her daddy's life so, so many times. God bless you.
Oh, I feel like crying. That's so hard because, like, imagine going through that and not being able to tell, like, I don't know how old his daughter is, but not being able to tell them what you're going through and express that to them and just, that would be so hard. Not feeling comfortable enough or vulnerable enough to share that with anyone, but you'll have, like, that's the thing, that's what's so beautiful about like the YouTube comments sometimes, because it's like a safe space to just like,
it's like people use it as their therapy.
It's just, or just an outlet really to like get out something that they've been holding within themselves, and like a little part of themselves that maybe they like would have never said out loud, you know. I feel like it's just insane the impact music has on someone's state of mind.
It literally can save a life. That's what's fucking crazy.
Yeah.
One song, one tragic moment in Eric Clapton's life has saved a man from himself as well.
Yeah. Fuck yeah, when you put it that way, it's like crazy to think the domino effect that a tragic moment can have from one person's life, but how it can then impact the lives thereafter it.
Yep. And I don't think that man would be the only one that goes to this song for salvation.
No, definitely not. Far out.
I know. Another comment that I wanted to read was, I lost my wife 2 weeks ago from COVID-19. The feeling of having to watch the love of your life slowly choke to death alone in ICU and not being able to do anything about it is indescribably horrific, and it tore a hole in me. She tried to call me while I was at work before they sedated her because they knew she wasn't coming back. I missed her calls due to poor reception where I work. She left her sister a message to give me saying, tell Trinity that I love him. I loved her more than I ever thought I could love someone. Are you okay?
Yeah, that's really sad.
Are you all right to keep reading this?
Yeah.
And although my heart still beats, I died with her in ICU that day. Rest in peace, Catherine Bernard. I hope you know how much you meant to me. I miss you so much. It literally hurts me. I would have done anything to rewind time long enough to have been able to answer you your call. If I could only go back in time long enough to give you one last painful kiss.
It's actually so beautiful.
I know.
And so hard, like, especially in that time, like, it's hard because, like, in that, like, I know for during COVID times, it was hard with all the, like, the regulations for you in terms of, like, pregnancy and having your partner be able to visit you while you were giving birth to someone. And then on the other spectrum of that, it's also hard when you've got all those laws in place and you're losing someone at the same time and you're not able to go see them and you're not able to be there with them, and you still have to just go and live your life knowing that you have no control over what's going to happen to them.
I remember seeing on the news, like, at the time where the lockdowns were bloody crazy, where people would lose their parents or siblings or children even, and that person was not allowed to go see that person if they lived in a different state.
Yeah.
Like they knew their father, for example, was on their deathbed, but they weren't allowed to go and see their father on their deathbed. Yeah, I remember
those two. It's crazy because you understand from the perspective of, like, you get why, because obviously none of us understood the actual intensity of it back then, or what it actually was, or how everything was happening, especially in the early days of the pandemic. Yeah. But, like, in the long run, it's hard not to look back on those and be like, oh my God, like, I just, those are, that's one period of time for the world, but for that one person, that's their whole fucking life.
I know.
Like, and it's, yeah, like, I it's hard to know what outweighs the other. It's like, sometimes you just, I feel like a moment like that is, I don't know. I feel like in those situations, like, that love that one person has for that other person or that family member would outweigh, because if they're willing to risk their life to go there to have that one last moment with their partner, then, like, allow that. Like, I don't know.
I think,
but then at the same time, then it's risking other people's safety.
It was such a messy situation, especially in Melbourne, where it was the strictest lockdowns. But I don't know, to deprive someone of the ability to say goodbye and to have closure, I don't even know what that would be like. Like, I was lucky enough to have the opportunity to say goodbye to my grandfather when he passed away. I was there when he passed away.
Yeah.
And I've said this, I don't think I've said this on the podcast before, but me witnessing his death was probably one of the most profound, oddly beautiful moments of my life. Mm. And besides the birth of my child, I don't think I've witnessed a more beautiful thing. The way it happened was just absolutely magical. And I picture what it would be like for someone to miss that opportunity, because that, if it was a similar situation to the way my grandfather died, where he was on his deathbed and all of his family was around him and we got to say goodbye, like, I can't imagine not having that moment, because, like, let me tell you what happened. So my grandfather had liver cancer, and they told him when he found out that he only had a few months to live, but he ended up lasting nearly a year.
Yeah.
Like, it was very impressive. But, you know, in the last, I'm going to say 3 days before he passed away, he ended up going to, I forget what the word is, but it's pretty much where you go to when you know you're dying. It's like a hospice, but it's called something else here. The day of his death, he was not responsive. He was basically just breathing pretty harshly, but he couldn't respond to you. And then my grandmother was always telling him, you know, it's okay, let go, let go, let go. And we were around him, and then the nurses knew that he was going. So they were like, you know, gather the family, he's going to go very, like, any minute now. So we were gathered, and then all of a sudden he went from being totally not responsive, he had his eyes closed, but he just opened them dramatically and stared into the eyes of my grandmother. And my dad was behind my grandmother and I was behind my dad. So us three were the witness to the major witnesses to what my grandfather did. And he opened his eyes. He looked into the eyes of my grandmother. And then my grandmother was like, it's okay, just let go, like, it's gonna be okay. And then he just closed his eyes and passed away. It was the most powerful moment I've ever witnessed in my life. And to witness someone who loved someone, like, my grandparents loved each other so much, and the way they just he just opened his eyes to just look at my grandmother for one last time, and then he passed away, it was the most magical moment of my life. So I think about what that moment has done for me and helped my grieving process and helped me live without him, because we were all such a tight family. I think about someone who didn't get that opportunity, and it actually really kills me.
Yeah, far out. I think you've told me this story before, and, like, obviously I'm fucking bawling my eyes out crying now, but, like, I think I've been someone that's really, really terrified of those situations of, like, people passing in general. And it's not something I've had to experience very much in my life. And I think that's why it's such a massive fear in my life. But you telling me that story when you did back then and again today, it's like, it's one of the only things in my life that's ever given me reassurance that it's okay.
Yeah.
And that something like that can be beautiful.
Mm.
I feel like you should be, and you are, but like, it's just such a magical moment to have been a part of. And I think like, to have your take on that process and what it can look like and what it can be is like a really special thing. Because especially in a world where there's so much fear around it.
Which is with good reason. It's a very scary experience. But I, like, it's not the first time that I've had close family members pass away. I had a very close family member pass away when I was a kid. But this was the first time that, I mean, like, I actually witnessed it.
Yeah.
And it was, it's really odd describing it as beautiful and magical because someone was passing away, but it's really hard to know if you're not there. But I don't know, I talk about this with my dad all the time because it was my dad's dad, how we both feel so privileged and lucky that we got to witness that.
Yeah.
Like firsthand.
Yeah. The closure it would, like what you said before, like the closure in those moments is sometimes like exactly what you need. Because I think a lot of the time, even when we're just fearful of those moments happening, it's the fact that we don't know, that we have so much uncertainty around it that makes it so scary.
Yeah.
And you being able to witness that closure and have that moment to look back on as your form of closure is like so, so powerful.
Yeah.
And to have that perspective is insane because I'm someone that I can't even say the word.
Yeah.
So for me, like, it's, fuck, I wish I could look at, like, life through your eyes in that way. Because I think it would make things a lot more, like, less anxious and fearful in my mind. Yeah.
Well, I've got my grandfather to thank for that. Yeah. He was beautiful in every single way. And I was his only granddaughter over a sea of grandsons. So him and I just really, I don't know, we bonded and we had a very special connection. So he's just the best thing ever in life and in death. Like, he managed to do it all. I don't know how, but he did.
That was a lot.
Yes, it was.
Yes, yes. So the song I chose was Tracy Chapman, Fast Car.
Ah, yes.
I just felt like, I'm curious to see what people would say about it. Like, it's obviously one of the most, like, known songs, I'd say. And is a song that, like, I feel like I just really like it. I don't know, like, what it is about it essentially for myself, but I feel like it's just a song about, like, just someone really wanting to just live a life and have opportunity, but kind of also feels obliged and stuck and that guilt of kind of taking care of, like, their life they were born into essentially. There's one comment I wanted to read in particular. I was a teacher at a high school in a very poor area of Oregon. This song makes me cry because it described exactly the lives of so many of my students. The part where I break down is when she said she worked at a convenience store and managed to save up a little bit of money, just enough to go somewhere, anywhere where they can be someone. It rips my guts. Those are my students, hundreds of them trying to find some kind of better life. And it makes me sad because it's like, it's so true, like, especially when you're in like a position when you're working with kids and you don't have any control over like what their home life's like, but you get to have that little part of influence for them throughout the middle of the day. And I'm like a school photographer at the moment, so I see those moments, I see those kids, even if I'm only with them for like 5 minutes, I see their insecurities and I see how the adult in their life, whether it be at school or whether their mums came to the school photo, how they talk to them.
Yeah.
And like, and even from like when I was a kid, like, it's just crazy to think that some of these kids have such big dreams and big aspirations, but like they might not be able to ever achieve them just because they might be stuck taking care of a parent that didn't want to take care of themselves essentially, or isn't able to, or is struggling with their own issues. And just the responsibility that kids sometimes feel to like just be that emotional and physical support for their parent.
Yeah.
Is definitely something I can relate to.
Oh, me too. I've been there.
Yeah.
Having to be I wouldn't say it, like an emotional carer.
Yeah.
Basically for one of my parents, especially in my, like throughout my high school life, I took a lot of days off to care, like, and to be like a support for my mom. I also feel like this is, and we were kind of talking about this the other day, the importance of having an excellent teacher in a kid's life is to allow them to kind of, if they're not getting that guidance at home towards education and learning or to aspiring to be something, they can hopefully get that from school.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like it really depends on the teachers that you have that make you excited about life
and learning as well.
And trying to achieve something for yourself.
100%. Like, it's crazy to me because a lot of people don't realize, like, yes, children are children, fair enough. Like, you might as an adult think that they're not going through as much as you. You might think that they have it easy because when you were in high school, you had it easy compared to the life you live now, for example. But some kids don't have it easy. Some kids are struggling so much. And something that you might think is completely petty and not important at all is everything to that kid in that moment in their life. It's their whole world, especially if they've got things going on at home. And I feel like whether that kid is 5 or 15, to treat them like their emotions are valid, because they are.
Yeah.
And like, it's just, it's easy to sometimes dismiss a child for their feelings and their emotions or the way that they're acting, but they're acting that way for a reason. And I think if we take the time to be curious about why they're acting that way, or why they're feeling that insecure about something, or why they might be late to school. Maybe they're late to school for a whole different reason than why you think. Maybe they're late to school not because they're lazy, because their parent can't take them, or their sibling. Like, I was always late to school because my sister was a school refuser and we struggled to get her to school in the morning. So every morning before school was just like actually a nightmare for me at one point because I was going through my parents' divorce. I was struggling with intrusive thoughts through my diagnosis with OCD. And on top of that, obviously my family, like my parents were going through things of their own at the time. My sister was going through her own thing at the time too. And we were all just doing what we could to survive. Mm. And I would come to school and I would feel absolutely like distraught by the time it was like 9 o'clock.
Yeah.
I felt like I spent the whole day already crying.
I know. It's like you've had a whole day before your day even started.
Yeah. And a lot of people will just go and sit, like even your peers at school and stuff, they'll just, or in general, this could be at work as well. Like, people don't know what went on before you got there.
I know.
And if someone's not going to tell you because they don't feel comfortable to, or they don't really need to tell you, it doesn't mean that because they haven't told you that things aren't going on, that they're not, and that they don't exist. It's like sometimes the people in your life that, whether you're a close person to them or not, if you're seeing them every day at school or at work, like, just remember that they're also a human and they also have their whole own life. And like, maybe they're not speaking to you poorly or not showing up the way they need to show up for a whole different reason that's going on at home that's not related to the place you're in right then and there. Because I know that's true for everyone.
Yeah.
And it's hard to step out of our own lives sometimes to see that that can be true for someone else.
And that's okay to not remember that other people have going on, because it's so easy to like not be consumed by what you're going through sometimes and to actually step out of your own shoes and into someone else's to think, oh, hey, they might be, you know, going through something. That's why it's important for, you know, kids especially, I think, to lead with kindness, because you just don't know what their home life is like. And that's where bullying can really affect them more than any adult can realize if they're bullying someone at work. I heard this thing about the Joker, and this is so random, but I don't know if it was in the Batman TV show where Mark Hamill was the Joker or something like that, but I'd heard it on a movie podcast that I listened to, that when it came to the Joker, like, it was just one bad day.
Yes.
That got him there.
One bad
day. You're only one bad day away from being like the Joker.
This is something I talk about a lot. I think I've spoken to you about it before as well. Yeah. Like, you know how easy it is to get in the mind frame of revenge?
Yeah.
It is very easy to get in the mind frame of revenge in the smallest way. It doesn't have to be like your full taking over the world. Yeah. It can be in the smallest way. And so easy to make the choice of that rather than to just take it in and try and just suck it up.
Yeah.
Because sucking it up, when you've sucked it up enough times, it fucking sucks at that point. It's not sucking that thing up. It's sucking your soul up.
I know.
And so I think that, like, we forget sometimes, like, the biggest people in the world that have done really horrible things, like, and I've mentioned this a few times, but not on the podcast, but something I do think about often is like cartoon supervillains as well. Like, it takes, like, I've seen little sketches of them saying, like, the thing that all Marvel supervillains have in common is the fact that, like, they dropped their books at school and no one came and picked them up.
Yeah, it's exactly like what happened to Jamie Foxx's Electro in The Amazing Spider-Man 2.
Yeah.
You know, he was just someone who felt like he was invisible.
Mm.
And if he would drop his stuff at work, no one would help him. And the one person that did was Spider-Man that one time. So he became obsessed. Yeah. And that's what essentially turned him into a villain.
Yeah.
You know, it's actually, it's fucking scary.
It is scary. And it's quite like, that's the thing. It's like, it's so easy when you do feel invisible and you feel like you're being just seen through by everyone to then think like, well, if no one else is caring for me in this moment, then why should I care about everyone else?
Yeah.
And that can be a really like hard, dark thought pattern to be in. And to be honest with you, I've had that thought pattern. Yeah. I've definitely had those moments where I just feel like, what is the point of me putting all this effort in to understand everyone else when no one gives a shit about understanding me?
Yeah.
And it's just, it just goes to show the real beauty in kindness and beauty in curiosity and in just showing up for people, whether you know them or not sometimes.
Yeah.
Because you never know what your small word or your, like,
or even just a smile to someone.
Just a smile, just a wave. How that's impacting someone else's day. Yeah. Like these YouTube comments we're reading right now, maybe someone didn't do that for these people, right? But sometimes a song will do that for them. Yes. Like someone putting out their creativity, like someone putting out their podcast, someone putting out their post about what's going on in their life.
Mm.
Just because someone's not interacting with it, just because someone's like, you're not getting all the likes and all the reactions from that post that you put up that you think you should have received or that you should have gotten, doesn't mean someone didn't see that and feel inspired by it and that made a difference in their life. So it just goes to show like the power of vulnerability as well, because like people really don't, I think a lot of people, although we've come a long way, like a lot of people still do not understand that like there is so much power in vulnerability and that you literally have the ability to just fucking like actually change the world.
I know.
If we all just were a little bit more vulnerable.
I know. And words, sometimes they weigh more than anything.
Mm-hmm.
Like sometimes words hit harder than actual, you know, punches.
Oh, yeah. You know that saying, sticks and stones may break my bones, but names will never hurt me? Or words will never hurt me, something like that. I remember hearing that at school and being like, no one hits me or anything like that, but I still feel shit sometimes. Like, why am I not allowed to feel shit? Yeah, and I think that was such a, like, crappy sentence to say.
I know.
Like, and to be told to say when someone says something mean to you or does something mean. Like, I feel like... Yeah, I think I really hope kids on the playground don't still say that, because it's just like words can hurt and it doesn't
they hurt more than the physical stuff sometimes.
Yeah, and it doesn't make you weak.
No.
And it doesn't mean that you're, what's the word I'm looking for, like soft now because a word may have offended you. It's purely because, think about majority of people that don't take action on their dreams, that don't fulfill like things in their life, that end up really living a life where at the time they're 60 they're like, fuck, what have I done? Why do I suddenly now want to have like this moment where I go and do all the things I wish I had spent the last 50 years doing?
Yeah.
Is because someone once said something to them that made them then think, I can't do that.
Yeah.
I can't achieve that. I'm not worthy of that. I'm not lovable. I'm not like, I'm not good enough for this.
Yeah.
And that's not because someone kicked them. That's because someone probably said something that made them feel that way.
Yeah.
So the long-term effect of words, as well as physical shit, the long-term effect of words as long as physical stuff, it really does impact people in the long term. And I think it's very easy to jump online and just say, make a few comments here and there and think it hits no one. I think we've said this on the podcast before, but it definitely hits someone. Even when you might not see their response, but... it's still probably the thing that they think about at one point in their life later down the track.
Most
that's like, definitely. Oh, yeah, well, when this happened, then I instantly thought about that scenario where that person kind of made that real for me.
Yeah.
And then it's just, it's crazy that a lot of the self-critiquing that goes on in everyone's brain is just someone else's voice.
I feel like I'm noticing now as I'm becoming a parent, and the more I've learned about myself through therapy and, you know, things that have happened to me as a child, and I'm so aware of what I say sometimes to my son and how it affects him. It's amazing what things that have been said to you as a child impact you for the rest of your life, but you don't know it because you may not remember. I remember this time I was trying to get my son ready for daycare, and he just wasn't cooperating. And I give myself credit because I had a lot of patience. Like, this is where my antidepressants have really helped me, because they've really given me a lot of patience when it comes to tantrums and stuff. I can really keep my cool now.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm trying to tell him, you know, come on, let's go to the car. We're going to pick a song. Would you like to listen to Buzz or this? And I let out a little bit like, come on, come on. You know, yeah. like a little thing like that. With my change of tone, my son went and laid down in between his toys and just like had his lay down on his side with his back to me facing the wall.
Yeah.
And it broke me.
Yeah.
That slight change of tone that I had affected him like that.
Yeah.
So what did I do? I immediately went up to him. I gave him kisses. I gave him hugs. I apologized. I said, I shouldn't have spoken to you that way. It was that moment that it really hit me. Wow, my words and the way, not just my words, the way I say my words affects these kids more than anything right now.
Yeah. Isn't it crazy? Do you then link back to the way people spoke to you when you were his age? And you're definitely. like, wow, it makes so much sense. Like, I know how he'd be feeling because I've felt that before.
Like,
where you just want to run away from an adult because they've, like, suddenly changed their tone up with you.
Yeah, and I feel like having my son has taught me so much about what happened to me as a kid. It's really bizarre. But I think the point that we're trying to make here is that, you know, kids go through hard times as well.
Yeah.
And you need to give the kids more credit than what they get.
Exactly. Especially if you're a person of influence in their life.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Kids are very resilient, and they're resilient more than adults sometimes. They really are.
Oh, yeah.
But fuck, everyone has their breaking point.
Dude, when you think about it, right, I think back to being a child and what I was freaking going through in my mind. Obviously, I have been undiagnosed with ADHD my whole life, so I didn't know that what I was feeling was, like, completely valid at the time.
Yeah.
And so for me, I was just so confused and going through a really, really shit period of time. And this is from, I'm saying, from, like, 5 onwards. So just thinking back to those moments and those memories and thinking, like, holy shit, how the hell was I that resilient? How the hell was I that strong from that age? How was I that strong to just still put on a freaking brave face, still go to school, still talk to people? So even though I was shit scared of social interactions, how did I still go to all those things and then come home, still do whatever I need to do, spend time by myself, and then cry myself to sleep and start the day again?
Could you imagine doing that now?
And never telling a soul what I felt.
Never telling a soul.
And it's sad because, like, if I was doing that from that age, that's how I learned to live.
Yeah.
Like, that's how I learned to deal with my problems, to not tell a soul, to just keep it to myself, put on a brave face, and just go do the thing that everyone that's an adult is telling me to do.
Yeah.
And then until I was, like, in my, like, the start of my 20s, I realized, like, what is this pattern I'm playing?
Yeah.
Like, what am I doing? How am I going to live the rest of my life doing this? Like, am I going to live the rest of my life still, like, bottling everything up and holding it in and thinking that, like, I'm the problem all the time? And that, like, I just have to just, I can't be who I want to be and be who I am. And it just, it's crazy because, like, you'd think that through that resilience as a child, I'd then be even more resilient as an adult. But you know what? As an adult, I can't go a week with feeling that way I felt as a kid anymore. Yeah. And it's not to say I'm weaker now. It's just to say, like, I've finally, that shell is broken in a good way where I don't need to put that hard exterior up anymore. I've learned that shell that I put up originally was taught. As a person of influence in a kid's life, you are teaching them how they should treat you and how they should treat themselves.
Yes, my God.
And how they should handle their emotions. Yeah. And when they should express them and when they shouldn't.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean you're telling them physically, like, hey, you should say this and you should do that. It's it's what you're doing in front of them.
It's what you're showing. And we had a great guest named Jordan Syatt. And he had just recently had a child. And we were talking to him about how that's, you know, impacted him and his life and stuff. And he actually said that having kids is like them holding a mirror to you.
Yeah.
And showing you your day-to-day behaviors that you don't even realize you're doing. He actually described it that as you have a guest and maybe they've overstayed their welcome and you're just dying for them to go home because you want to be in your natural state.
Yeah.
Whereas when you've got kids, they're there for that natural state that your mate, you don't want to show a guest, but you're willing to show your kids because they live with you. So you need to be a bit more aware of your behaviors.
Yeah. And in turn, it's going to help you.
Yeah, exactly.
Because if you then watch your, like what you just said before, like if you're then watching the way you're responding emotionally to your own issue.
Yeah.
And you're watching your kid's reaction to that.
Yeah.
Then you should be like, wait, is this, if I don't want him ever responding like this, why am I allowing myself to live like this?
Exactly.
And that's where beautiful mindset switches happen, and that's where you're able to then recognize, like, hey, I don't need to live like this anymore. Yeah. I don't need to deal with my emotions in this same way I've taught myself when I was five. Mm. That was a big key learning for me. It's like when I, and even when I fall back into that pattern of like self-isolating, I will tell myself, Elle, you don't need to hide your feelings anymore. Mm. You don't need to hold it all in. You don't need to have all the answers anymore the same way you did when you were 5 years old.
Yeah.
You don't need to pretend that you're okay.
Mm.
And I remind myself that, hey, the things we learned when we were a kid are not necessary to survive anymore.
Yeah.
They were then, and they kept us so much safer then, but they, right now, they're not doing us any bit of a service. And that's okay. And it's okay that we still sometimes fall into that habit that we always had, because it's natural.
We're human at the end of the day. We're all going to make mistakes.
Exactly.
Like, it's impossible to be a perfect influence all the time.
Exactly. It's about, and the thing is, like, if you're showing your emotion, that's totally fine. It's like, then at least then explain why you did.
Why you did.
Why? Because I know for me, like, I still struggle with emotional regulation, and I study it and I understand it and I teach other people it.
Mm.
But sometimes I'll still fall out of whack.
Yeah.
And when I do, I have to explain to the people around me that have witnessed that what just went on for me and why I've reacted in that way. And usually when I do, they can sympathize and they can understand. They can see how I got to that space. Mm. And I think even if you do have an emotional outburst and your child is there, if they're at an age where you can communicate with them openly, to express that and explain to them, like, hey, sometimes you're going to feel rage. Mm. Sometimes you're going to feel angry. Sometimes you're going to feel frustrated. Sometimes you're going to just feel super, super sad. And that's okay.
Mm.
Because it's not about how you even show that emotion. It's how you let them know that it's okay.
Yeah.
Because you shouldn't let them feel like they need to hold it in.
Exactly. It's about allowing them to let go, like exactly like what you said, but learning how to either apologize. I feel like some people have a hard time apologizing to people.
Or to children as well,
To children especially. Oh my God. But exactly what you said, to help them learn how to, maybe breathing exercises, learn how to figure out ways to calm them, whether it is exercising or something. I feel like it needs to be taught. Like, for some reason, we've all left to fend for ourselves as we become adults.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, shit, how do I figure out what makes me actually calm? And you have to go through this whole cycle of...
Yeah, emotional regulation should be a class.
I agree.
Taught in every single year level.
I agree.
I really think it's something that every single person benefits from, and every single person would love to learn the answers to.
Yes, exactly.
Literally. Like, it's literally something that everyone would like to understand, because it affects freaking everyone.
I know.
It just needs to be talked about so that people understand that it's okay to feel every single range of emotion and to express it. And with that, I feel like I don't know how I went from Tracy Chapman fast car to this, but there we go. A little lesson for the emotions.
Wow.
Yeah.
That was, you know what? I liked everything that you said today.
Same with you, my friend. Same with you. You had me in tears before.
Mm.
Oh, dear.
Yeah.
But yeah, guys.
Wow, that was that went differently to what I expected.
Same here.
I think it led to a nice conversation.
Me too.
I really liked that.
Me too. I liked it too.
Hmm.
Tell us if you guys liked it. Let us know. Message us on Instagram. We always love a message.
And also, if you have a song that you want us to read the comments to and kind of talk about,
or if you have a story that goes with a song,
let us know your story, and we can read it out. Especially that, I would really want to know.
Yeah. So please let us know, and let us know if you like this kind of segment we had going on today, and if it's something we should keep on going and doing.
Yeah, we'll most definitely do it. All right, thank you so much for listening. Don't forget that all the songs that we mention in any episode will be in our Spotify playlist. That's linked in the description below.
Yes. And if you guys would like to work with me with one-on-one coaching, you can reach me via the little description below the
episode. That's right. All right, guys, thank you so much for listening, and we will see you next week.
Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye now. Bye-bye. 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 Bye-bye.